Hi, everyone, and welcome back. My name is Sejal Parikh, and I'm your host today. You're listening to Precision Bites, talking with patients about weight management. This is a podcast of simulated clinical encounters dealing with motivational interviewing and weight management in a variety of social contexts. Today, the provider will see a 65-year-old female with chronic back pain and a history of opioid dependence. She's been treated with methadone for the past year, and her treatment has been complicated by a 20-pound weight gain. The patient's comorbidities are chronic back pain and opioid dependence. She lives alone and is on disability. The things we want you to take away from this episode include 1. How chronic pain, opioid dependence, and weight interact. 2. How to set an agenda for a visit with a patient with these issues. And 3. Common supports and resources for weight management for these patients. Hope you enjoy. Part 1. Directing the conversation.
Come in.
Hi, Ms. Smith.
Hi, Doc.
I'm really glad you came in today for this follow-up appointment. You know, at your last visit, I told you that I was worried about the recent weight gain. So that's why we got the labs done, and those results are part of what I want to talk to you about today.
Okay. Well, Doc, I know I've gained weight, but it's because I can't exercise. I feel like my pain has gotten worse over the past year. I mean, I know you put me on those meds and all, but it just feels unbearable sometimes.
The pain feels unbearable sometimes?
Yeah, it does. It really does. Maybe more than just sometimes.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you told me that it's still bad, even though we've been increasing the dose of your methadone. I'm making a note of that, so I remember to come back to that before you leave here. Okay, Ms. Smith, so I'm worried about the weight gain, but before we get into that, I'm just quickly going to refresh my memory on your history. So, I have here in your chart that you hurt your back in 2002 at work, and it's been really affecting you since.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been that long. I can't believe that I've just been in so much pain for such a long time. It's just terrible.
I know. I'm sorry about that. It looks like you were originally treated with opioid painkillers, but that didn't really help, right?
No, they did. It's just that my pain keeps getting worse and worse, and the other doctor wouldn't give me a higher dose of the meds. And that's when I started coming to you. But maybe, I don't know, the pain is just so bad now.
Right. So you started coming to me last year, and at that time it seemed like the painkillers were almost making the problem worse. And that's when we started the methadone replacement, right?
Yeah. And I guess the methadone helped in the first week or two, but since then the pain is really just becoming worse.
Okay. So before we get into diet and exercise, I want to make sure I understand what's going on right now. How active are you right now?
Doc, I'm on disability. That's how active I am right now.
Right. And Ms. Smith, how much can you walk right now? Can you walk around the house, or in a park, or in the mall? What do you think?
Doc, I'm in pain. I can barely stand for 20 minutes without being in excruciating pain. I really can't go running marathons when I'm in 8 out of 10 pain.
I understand. You know, I'm just trying to get a sense of what's going on now so we can come up with a feasible plan going forward.
I mean, I think we just need to get my pain under better control.
I agree, and I made that note to definitely get to in this appointment. I just have a couple more questions. What are non-medicine things that decrease your pain or make it easier to get out of bed?
I mean, I have incredible willpower to get out of bed. The pain is always there.
Are there things you enjoy doing when the pain is a little less on your mind?
Doc, I used to have hobbies. I used to be really active.
What were some of your hobbies?
I used to love to garden and go have dinner with my friends. But now I can't even leave my house. I can't do anything. I have no life.
Well, I want you to have a life. Let's see what we can do for you today. Are there any types of exercises you used to enjoy?
I used to go on long walks, but I can't do that anymore.
Miss Smith, I know you used to work and be active, and you haven't been able to do those things. Now, I want you to imagine something. Imagine that you are not in any pain. The pain just went away magically. What are things you want to do?
That's some dream.
No, really, Miss Smith. What are things you want to do?
I want a garden again. I want to walk to my neighbor's house. I want to renew my driver's license so I can drive to my friend's house. I just don't want to be trapped because of this stupid back.
That sounds wonderful. One more question. How do you think your mood is?
My mood? All I can think about is my pain.
Do you feel blue a lot?
Yeah.
Pretty often, you think?
Yeah.
Do you think you're depressed?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you ever think of hurting yourself?
No, I mean my lows are pretty low, but not that bad. It's just the pain. I didn't used to be like this.
Thanks for sharing with me. I know this is hard.
Pearl 1, directing the conversation. The key to opening the encounter with Ms. Smith is understanding, 1, the context of her problem, and 2, lots and lots of patience. So, what problems does she have? Unfortunately, Ms. Smith has 2 common overlapping problems. She has this chronic back pain and opioid dependence. About 1/3 of all Americans suffer from chronic pain. In fact, 20% of all outpatient visits were for pain in 2014. You will undoubtedly see many, many patients with pain throughout your career. For the purposes of motivational interviewing, we recommend focusing on the impact of the pain or how the pain affects your patient's life. Focusing on the impact of the pain will help your patients feel heard and will also help you understand the patient's motivators. The provider in this encounter asked Ms. Smith about her hobbies, mood, occupation, and exercise, all things that are affected by pain. Other things affected by pain include relationships, sleep, and activities of daily living. Ms. Smith also suffers from opioid dependence. A national survey conducted by the Department of Health and Human Services in 2015 found that 3.8 million people over the age of 12 reported misuse of a prescription pain medication in the past month. So all in all, that's a little over 1 in 3 Americans in pain and 1 in 100 reporting misuse of prescription pain medication. Really common problems. It's important to mention that many of these patients with complex medical issues need an interdisciplinary approach to treatment. In real life, Ms. Smith should be followed by a pain specialist, an opioid dependence treatment clinic, PT, a separate PCP, and probably a psychiatrist. However, patients don't often get all the resources they need, and so for the educational purposes of this podcast, we've lumped all her issues into one appointment. While you may not need to manage all aspects of her care, you will definitely see some patients in pain, some misusing prescription painkillers, and some having side effects of these pain medications. So this background of chronic pain and opioid dependence causes an inherent tension in the clinic visit. Ms. Smith has 2 debilitating conditions and possibly depression. Understandably, weight is not at the top of the list of her concerns. However, with a 10% weight gain in 1 year, the provider had to start a conversation about it. So how do you start a visit like this? Set yourself up for success. Set the agenda ahead of time. When you ask your patient to return for a weight follow-up, tell your patient this follow-up is specifically for weight, Not for pain, not for medication, not for any other issues. If you're concerned about rapid weight gain, getting blood work done can be helpful, and it signals to the patient that the weight gain is concerning. Our final note here is this. Remember that provider countertransference, frustration, irritation, whatever you want to call it, is really common with chronic pain and opioid-dependent patients. Recognize your feelings. Prepare yourself emotionally before the encounter. After the visit, have a piece of chocolate, go for a short walk, take a bathroom break, whatever you need to do to clear your mind, do it. The more you recognize your own feelings, the more successful you will be in your difficult encounters. Part 2.
Okay, Ms. Smith, I feel like I have a pretty good idea of what's going on and how you're feeling right now. I want to talk more specifically about this 20-pound weight gain in the last year. That's a 10% increase in your total body weight. Your lab showed a high fasting glucose, meaning your body isn't regulating sugar well. Your cholesterol panel showed low good fats and high bad fats. A long-term measure of your blood sugar called HbA1c puts you in the pre-diabetic range. In English, the rapid weight gain and lab results show us you have a rising risk of diabetes and other chronic disease like heart disease. That was a lot of information.
I just can't catch a break.
What do you mean?
I'm already in pain, and now all of this.
I know this is a lot, and I'm worried about it. That's why I wanted to see you again, just to talk about your weight. But look, we can really come up with a plan for this.
I mean, if you fix the pain, I'll take care of the rest. If I wasn't stuck to my bed because of my back, I don't think this would have happened.
No, I don't think this would have happened either. So most people gain weight because the amount of energy they consume as food is greater than the energy they use in exercise.
Doc, I can't exercise because my back hurts. That's all I've been trying to tell you in the last 5 minutes. I just feel like you're not listening to me. I don't know what the point of this is.
Miss Smith, I know you're frustrated. Look, I'm asking you all of these questions because I don't want to just write you a script and send you on your way. I really do want to help you get your life back.
Thanks, Doc. I just don't think we're going anywhere, that's all.
Okay, let me tell you what I think we can do. From my end, I think there is room to change your medication. The methadone you are on can cause weight gain in some patients. Plus, it's not controlling your pain well. So I can think of putting you on another medication that doesn't have these side effects. That's what I can do from my end. What do you think you can do from your end?
Pearl 2, sharing information. One quick note before we get started. In the beginning of part 2, when the provider mentioned good and bad fats, he meant good and bad cholesterol. Our apologies. Okay, so back to the encounter. That was pretty emotional. Talking with patients with chronic pain can be difficult. This conversation can feel like a chicken and egg argument. The patient says she could lose weight if her pain was fixed, and the provider says that exercising will help with the pain. If you feel stuck in a rut with this patient, sometimes it's helpful to take a step back and be direct. So when we say take a step back and be direct, here's what we mean. Tell the patient exactly what you're worried about. In this case, the provider was worried about the increasing risk of developing diabetes and coronary artery disease. Being direct has to be tailored to each patient, though. Some patients are more prone to guilt, others are more prone to catastrophizing, and others are more prone to scapegoating. Anticipating your patient's response is important. In this encounter, the provider knows that Ms. Smith is prone to scapegoating. This informed the provider's counseling about the side effects of methadone. Methadone, a mu opioid receptor agonist, is known to increase sweet food preference, change the homeostasis of satiety, and increase insulin resistance. When about 100 methadone patients were asked about the side effects of methadone, 80% complained of weight gain. For a patient prone to feeling guilty in a non-productive way, this conversation could have gone very differently. The provider could have cited these statistics and told the patient that the weight gain was due to changes in brain biology and that changing the medication should take care of the weight gain. But that's not what the provider did in this encounter. The provider tried to de-emphasize the role of methadone treatment in weight gain in order to emphasize how her lifestyle contributes to the weight gain. Word choice such as can cause weight gain instead of commonly causes weight gain changes what the patient focuses on as the primary contributor to weight gain. Another technique that can garner goodwill with your patient includes explicitly telling the patient what you can do for them. If patients feel like you're going to do something concrete for them, then they're more likely to engage in conversations about changes they need to make at home. Statements like, "Here's what I can do from my end," emphasizes the teamwork or the in this togetherness that behavior change requires. Part 3, introducing medication-assisted treatment changes.
You're taking away my methadone?
I think we can put you on another medication that might help more with pain and not cause the weight gain. The new medicine is called buprenorphine, and it's been helping a lot of people. It works differently than methadone.
But I really can't afford to be in more pain than I am right now, Doc. Are you sure about this new medication?
Miss Smith, I wouldn't even bring up this medication if I didn't think it would help you. The new medication, buprenorphine, has been proven to be just as effective as methadone for pain, is much, much safer, and has fewer side effects. The other option for pain is a set of meds called naltrexone and bupropion. That combination has really helped people with their pain and mood and can help with weight loss. But it tends to make people pretty nauseous, so that's why I don't recommend that for you.
Wait, what's the new med you recommend?
It's called buprenorphine.
Okay, well, let's see what you've come up with this time.
Okay, we'll chat more about the details of buprenorphine at the end. Now I think we're all set up to talk about what changes you think will be helpful for your weight.
Pearl 3, introducing medication-assisted treatment changes. The takeaways here are some key differences in the treatment of opioid dependence. There are currently three popular and FDA-approved treatments for this: methadone, naltrexone, and buprenorphine. Methadone is one of the oldest meds used for this purpose. It's a mu opioid receptor agonist that has moderate abuse potential and in high doses can cause dangerous respiratory depression and QT prolongation. Naltrexone is a mu opioid receptor antagonist that reduces opioid cravings, has low abuse potential, and it can cause GI upset and insomnia. Buprenorphine is a relatively new medication for opioid dependence. It's a mixed partial agonist-antagonist, and therefore it reduces cravings, reduces pain, and has relatively low abuse potential. It's important to note that each of these medications affects food preference, satiety, and weight differently. Mu receptor agonists like methadone increase sweet food preference in most people. They also increase the homeostatic set point for satiety and have been known to worsen insulin resistance. Mu receptor antagonists like naltrexone, in combination with an antidepressant bupropion, have actually been shown in large randomized phase 3 trials to decrease body weight, decrease food cravings, and improve lipid panels. This naltrexone-bupropion combination is trademarked as Contrave. However, Contrave has been found to cause significant nausea, dry mouth, and confusion. The mixed mu receptor agonist antagonist buprenorphine has not been known to significantly increase weight. Finally, let's chat quickly about who can prescribe these medications. Since Ms. Smith has dual diagnoses of chronic pain and opioid dependence, a provider can prescribe buprenorphine for chronic pain without needing an X license. If the patient had an exclusive diagnosis of opioid dependence, the provider would need an X license to prescribe buprenorphine. Prescribing methadone for opioid dependence treatment requires being part of an approved methadone clinic. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's Center for Substance Abuse Treatment has specific guidelines for methadone clinic accreditation. You can find this information at store.sahmsa.gov. They even have an app to help you with medication-assisted treatment of opiate dependence. Look at that. There really is an app for everything. Part 4, behavior changes.
We just talked about the pain component, so let's focus on diet and exercise now. What do you think, Ms. Smith?
I don't know, Doc. What do you think?
Well, let's start with your diet. How do you think that's changed in the last year?
You know, I do try to eat healthy. I really do. But I don't know.
Have your food preferences changed in the last year?
Wait, now that you mention it, I think so, maybe. Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Well, I've always had a sweet tooth, ever since I was little. Always. I've just always had a sweet tooth. But, I don't know, before, maybe it was less?
Okay, so tell me about what dessert was enough, satisfying enough, or filling enough before your back pain.
Why does back pain have anything to do with my sweet tooth?
Well, opioids have been known to interact with your hunger and taste preferences. Opioids make a lot of people who like sweets crave sweets even more.
No way.
Yeah, actually, the parts of your brain that react to opioids also affect your taste preferences. So, you were telling me about the desserts that used to be enough before your back pain?
Yeah, okay. So, before my back pain, one piece of chocolate cake was more than enough to satisfy a sweet craving.
And now?
Well, let's just say it's gotten a lot worse.
What do you mean?
I need a lot more to satisfy a craving now.
How much more?
A lot more.
Miss Smith, I just want to help come up with a diet plan. Knowing how much sweets you eat will help us plan the rest of the diet and what changes we can make.
Well, maybe it's more like a couple pieces. Or a whole cake now.
Okay. Thanks for telling me that. And have you noticed that you're eating more in general now?
Yeah. I guess I have.
Okay. And, Miss Smith, how is your food prepared right now?
Well, I'm on disability, so I get food stamps and everything. I try to make it to the store when I'm feeling okay.
Okay. Those were the diet questions I wanted to ask. And now, I know this sounds silly, but I do want to talk about exercise.
This again.
Bear with me. Do you like to swim?
Well, I used to.
Okay. So, these are some of my suggestions. Just think about them. I'll jot these down on a piece of paper as I go. In terms of diet, I know you're in a lot of pain, and it's hard to make it to the store to get groceries. Why don't we get you signed up for Meals on Wheels today with our social worker? I like Meals on Wheels because they try to get you 1/3 of your daily nutritional needs.
I don't really like that idea.
Why not?
I don't want to be so dependent on that stuff. It just seems... I don't know, I just don't like it.
Okay, well, why don't we think about it this way? What if we tried Meals on Wheels for a month, and after that, once your pain is under better control with the new meds, you can graduate to the Congregate Nutrition Program.
What's that?
Different places cooks free meals for eligible seniors. The reason I really like the Congregate Nutrition Program is that not only the food on the healthy side, but it's a great place to meet other people and socialize. I remember you telling me that one of the things you really enjoyed was driving to see your friends and have dinner. This could be a nice way to start that up again. We can make sure to clear it with our social worker. What do you think about that?
Okay.
I think another important thing we could do is think about your portion sizes. For most of my patients, I recommend getting smaller plates and cups.
That sounds expensive.
You know, it's actually not. I go to Walmart every couple of months, and when I was there last week, I saw this really great dining set for 4 people, 12 pieces total, for $10. And the reason I liked that set a lot was because the plates were smaller.
I guess that's not too bad.
Yeah, we just need something simple to get the job done, right? So, The big thing to look for is smaller plates and bowls. I like to recommend plates less than 9 inches across and bowls less than 6 inches across. I'm jotting those numbers down because I know that's a lot to remember.
Okay, I'll see about that.
Okay, so you told me that sweets have been more an issue for you since your back pain. What are ways you think you can cut down on the sweets?
You know, I really don't know. I just feel out of control about that.
Yeah, I understand. You know, one thing I do when foods are hard to avoid, I come up with rules for myself. Rules make it easier to make decisions. You just don't have to think about it as much. Can you think about any rules you can make about sweets?
To just not eat them?
Well, you know, 0 to 100 can be hard to do. Sometimes it's even counterproductive. How about something like this? I won't buy sweets with my EBT or food stamps.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm jotting that down, and we can touch base about that before the end of the visit.
Okay, we'll see.
Okay, so those are some really simple diet changes we can make. Now, I think it would be great if we did just one exercise change.
But Doc, what about the pain?
For a lot of my patients with back pain, I recommend water aerobics. The water takes a lot of pressure off your back, and you know, it actually works really well for a lot of people.
That also sounds pretty expensive, Doc.
If you have a community center near you, they often provide pretty cheap exercise classes. My front desk can give you the URL or phone number to your local community center on the way out.
Okay.
You know, that exercise class is also nice because it's social. Gets you out and meeting other people more.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl 4, behavior changes. So this section is all about planning specific behavior changes. Before we jump in, we have a disclosure we need to make. You should know that Part 4 did not adhere to the tenets of motivational interviewing. Motivational interviewing is all about letting the patient come up with their own ideas. The provider knows that Ms. Smith is in the pre-contemplative phase of behavior change and isn't ready to start identifying solutions yet. For a patient further along, you could always offer the patient a menu of options for behavior change. This is closer to authentic motivational interviewing. So anyways, back to our encounter. We know that opioids increase sweet food preference and increase the homeostatic set point for satiety. To counteract the increased sweet food preference in this patient on disability and a fixed income, the provider tried to kill two birds with one stone. The provider recommended healthy meal assistance programs that Ms. Smith is eligible for to decrease the opportunities that the patient has to buy and eat unhealthy sweet food. Most elderly patients qualify for meal assistance programs like Meals on Wheels and the Congregate Nutrition Program. Meals on Wheels is a federally funded safety net program that delivers meals to patients' homes. The Congregate Nutrition Program is another federally funded safety net program that funds the cooking of meals at local sites, like a church or a community center, where seniors can gather to eat together. Check with your social worker for more details about these programs in your area. To counteract the increased homeostatic set point for satiety, the provider recommended decreasing plate and bowl size. The method of decreasing dishware size has been effective in decreasing the amount of food consumed while increasing satiety in the average college student. It's not been formally studied in the opioid-dependent overweight population. It's a low-cost enough method that can't really harm the patient. Next, exercise for patients in pain can be tricky. In general, water aerobics is recommended for elderly patients with pain as it decreases the amount of stress on weight-bearing joints. A relatively small study of elderly men in a 12-week water aerobics class showed a significant decrease in self-reported back pain and an average drop of 1 BMI point. And this is great, but not all areas have community centers or affordable classes open to the public. Know the resources in your area. Finally, we want to briefly mention nutraceuticals, or products derived from food administered with the intent of causing positive health changes. This is a fast-growing industry with products that don't lend themselves easily to quantification or research. Anecdotally, soy, olive oil, and bergamot have decreased cholesterol levels and decreased the effect of opioids in opioid-dependent patients. These studies are far from our gold standard double-blind randomized trials, but nevertheless, it's important to know as patients are often curious about nutraceuticals. Part 5, switching medication-assisted treatment.
Okay, and now for my part. I'm going to taper down your methadone, and once you're off that, we'll switch you over to buprenorphine. The hard thing about buprenorphine is that you can't have any opioids in your system when you start or are on buprenorphine. The meds will make the opioids not work, and the opioids will make the meds not work. So if you accidentally took some methadone while on buprenorphine, then you'd just be in pain because the buprenorphine and the methadone will cancel each other out.
Oh.
So I'm planning a methadone taper for you. I'm going to print you out a copy and send one to the pharmacy. The taper will be over 2 weeks. The first week will be hard, but the second week will be a lot harder, okay? I want you to know this going in. The end of the taper will be hard. It really will be. So I want you to come in next week, 3 days into your taper, so I can give you something additional for the cravings and the pain. And I should see you every 2 to 3 days on your taper just so we can make sure you're doing okay on pain and stuff.
Is this a good idea? I mean, it sounds risky.
It's up to you, Ms. Smith. I told you what I was worried about with the weight gain, and you were telling me in the beginning of the appointment that you thought the meds weren't really working for you.
No, I actually was wondering if you could just write me more of the methadone. I think I just need a stronger dose.
Well, you know, we've been increasing the methadone over the last year. You're at the max dose now. We talk every couple months about the risk of methadone, right? If you take too much, it can slow your breathing and change your heart rhythm. That's really dangerous. I don't want anything like that to happen to you.
There has to be a safe way to increase the methadone, right, Doc?
Unfortunately, there's not. You're at the max dose that I feel safe prescribing. If this isn't working for you, you know our other option is buprenorphine.
Okay. Well, I'll decide later. How do I take the buprenorphine?
It's a tablet that dissolves in your mouth. Once you're done with the taper, you'll start taking a tablet in the morning and a tablet in the evening. The labs you need before that we already drew last time. The only other thing is that you'll have to meet with our case manager who will get you set up with some other resources.
Okay. Well, I guess you're not giving me a choice.
No, Miss Smith. The choice is always yours. We can stay on the same dose of methadone if you want.
Well, you're not giving me the choice of a stronger medication.
I don't think it would be safe to be on more methadone. I don't want you to go to sleep one night and not wake up because I wrote you too much methadone.
Doc. Okay, fine. Let's give this other med a shot. I don't think this dose of methadone is doing anything at all for me.
Okay, so that's the final thing on our list. Switching from methadone to buprenorphine. Okay, let me give you this paper. This is your taper schedule. It tells you how much methadone to take every day. We are going to go down by about 10% every 2 days and slow down at the end.
So when do I see you next?
How about in 3 days? I'll start lowering your dose tomorrow, so I think it would be good to check in then. And then on the next meeting, we'll talk more about the other things for buprenorphine. We want patients to know about counseling services and other resources for you once you've decided to switch to buprenorphine.
Okay, I guess.
Pearl 5, switching medication-assisted treatment. So again, changes to medication-assisted treatment of opioid dependence should be done in a methadone clinic or by a provider trained in administering buprenorphine. Recent evidence does show that a methadone taper of down by 10% every 1 to 2 days over a period of 2 to 3 weeks is reasonable. Withdrawal symptoms are worse once the patient is below 60% of their original methadone dose. The patient will benefit from symptomatic treatment of their withdrawal with non-opioid medication. Big picture. Part 5 was meant to give you some examples of how to talk to patients who are already on their max dose of methadone but still want more. One strategy is developing discrepancies between the patient's reported symptoms and desire for a larger dose. So, for example, Ms. Smith wants a larger dose of methadone, but she has repeatedly mentioned that escalating doses hasn't worked over the past year. When confronted with this discrepancy, most patients will respond by saying they just need a higher dose. Nevertheless, it is important to plant the seed of this discrepancy in the patient's mind. In the case that the patient insists on a higher dose of methadone, it is important to remind them of the medical complications of an overdose. Sometimes the conversation can feel dead-end. In those cases, it's fine to politely say things like, "This is the max dose I feel comfortable prescribing." Or, "You know, I can't prescribe a higher dose because it just would be unethical for me to put you in such a dangerous position." Remember to stand your ground. Part 6, Closing.
Okay, Ms. Smith. We talked about a lot of things today. Could you just remind me what changes we're making today?
Well, I'm going to sign up for Meals on Wheels. I'm going to buy smaller cups and plates. And I'm not going to use my food stamp money for sweets. And I'm to sign up for water aerobics classes. And then we'll try the new meds.
Perfect. So, I'll see you in 3 days. You have the sheet for the new doses for the methadone taper?
Yeah.
Does the taper make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, Ms. Smith. I will see you in 3 days. The front desk will fit you in. I'm really looking forward to seeing these changes implemented.
Okay. Thanks, Doc.
Pearl 6, Closing. Just like always, it's important to get buy-in for follow-up appointments in the last couple minutes of the encounter. In this particular encounter, it shouldn't be very difficult to get buy-in, as withdrawing patients need treatment for their symptoms. Remember that follow-up during the methadone taper is critical to preventing relapses. The agenda for the follow-up visit includes assessing the side effects of withdrawal, treating these side effects, following up on changes that were discussed during this appointment, and new weight recommendations. When treating side effects of methadone withdrawal, commonly used medications include clonidine for increased blood pressure and anxiety, ondansetron for nausea, naproxen for muscle and joint pain, and baclofen for muscle stiffness. New recommendations for weight management to address in the next visit could include recommending an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. We know that the 12-step programs have high rates of success for behavior change as compared to all other interventions. Finally, this is another reminder that provider countertransference is common with chronic pain and opioid-dependent patients. Recognize your feelings. After the visit, go for a short walk, take a bathroom break, whatever you need to do to clear your mind. Well, I hope that felt realistic and was helpful for you. Let's recap some of the key points from this podcast. 1. In the introduction, prepare yourself emotionally. Direct the conversation by setting the agenda ahead of time and getting blood work done. 2. When sharing information, tell the patient what you're worried about, but remember to tailor these statements to the patient's response tendencies. It's not productive to make a guilt-prone patient feel more guilty. Also, methadone increases sweet food cravings. 3. When introducing behavior changes, first, assess your patient's readiness for behavior change. If in the contemplative phase, offer a menu of options for changes. Remember to review public assistance programs, changes they can make in the kitchen, and exercise and pain management plans with your patient. When changing medication for medication-assisted treatment, sow the seeds of discrepancy when talking to patients who want higher doses of methadone. Stick to your clinical judgment and don't let patients sweet-talk you into writing for unsafe doses. 5. In the closing, get buy-in and set the agenda for a follow-up appointment. Thanks for listening. This was Talking with an Opioid Dependent Patient, Episode 2 of our podcast, Precision Bites, Talking with Patients About Weight Management. See you next time. This podcast was made possible by the support of the California Area Health Education Centers Program, California Public Health Training Centers, Western Region Public Health Training Center, and the Medical Scholars Fellowship by Stanford University. Thanks to Dr. Tracy Rydell, Dr. Kelvin Vu, Dr. Michelle Hauser for their feedback. Special thanks to Virginia Fowkes for her support and advice. Thanks to Charlotte Dubach-Reinhold, Victor D. Ragsdale, and Leah Slank for their superb acting.